welcome to A Bookish Home. I'm Laura Zara Popinski. This week, I am so happy to be sharing an interview with one of my favorite middle grade authors, Lisa Graff, who has a new book out called Far Away. Lisa Graff is the award-winning author of A Clatter of Jars, Absolutely Almost, A Tangle of Knots, Umbrella Summer, among others. Lisa lives with her family outside of Philadelphia, and her latest middle grade book is called Far Away. Lisa Graff, welcome to A Bookish Home. It's such an honor to get to chat with you today.
Thank you so much. I'm really excited.
Yes. So this is a particular thrill for me, I have to say. When I had been in my elementary school library, I can picture the Lisa Graff shelf in the library, and I would recommend one of your books to one of my students, and inevitably they would come back and start checking out every book on the shelf. So,
awesome.
Yes. So it is an honor to get to chat with you. And I love the latest book, Far Away. I had a hard time putting this one down and going to bed at a decent time. So for people who haven't read it yet, can you tell us a little bit about Far Away and CJ, the main character?
Yeah, so CJ, she's Caraway June, and she lives with her aunt. She's lived with her aunt her whole life. Her aunt is a psychic medium, so she communicates with dead people and passes messages along between the deceased and the people on Earth who love them. And they live in a giant tour bus, and they tour all over the country, and CJ helps with her aunt's shows. She's very savvy. She's the navigator for the tour. And on CJ's 12th birthday, she is all alone in the tour bus, and she finds something very unusual. She finds stamped on her wrist the image of an octopus. And in each of the octopus's tentacles is one letter, and the letters spell out, "Take heed." And so she doesn't really know where this message came from or what it means, but she has a feeling it has something to do with her mother, who died just a few hours after she was born. And so she sets off on a road trip with a boy named Jax. They steal a truck from her aunt's tour, which is obviously what every 12-year-old would do in this situation. And they try to figure out what's going on and what they're supposed to do about it.
Yeah, it's got so much you know, mystery and adventure to it, but also, like so many of your books, just packs that emotional punch where you're really feeling for the character. And I also just think with all of your books, you do such a wonderful job just like nailing that like middle grade voice. I feel like the character just always feels so authentic, which is wonderful. I would love to hear, because this is sort of an unusual topic, where did the idea come for this book and to, you know, have sort of that medium be such a big part of the story? What sparked that?
Yeah, I've always been really, really interested in mediums. I think it started because when I was in college, the exact time that I would get back to the dorms for my classes freshman year was when the show Crossing Over with John Edward was on TV. And I think I didn't really have any sense of mediums before that. And I was just super fascinated by it. And my roommate and I would watch it, and we'd be like, is this real? Like, is this not real? We have absolutely no idea. And I think since then, I've just become more and more interested in not so much whether or not psychic mediums are real and whether particular mediums are actually, you know, hucksters or whether they're doing an actual miracle, but more like why people come to decide what they believe about these people, like how they come to those beliefs.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, I thought, you know, in reading it, it was interesting to sort of look and see, like, in terms of why people do go to mediums. There was, I forget what the exact quote was, but CJ is talking about how it doesn't sort of matter what your walk of life is. Everybody has lost someone, and they've gone to, you know, mansions, and they've gone to, you know, people who are really down and out. But that emotional experience of wanting to connect again with someone you've lost is kind of universal.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really powerful.
Yeah. Well, the other thing I thought was interesting because it did have such a like mystery adventure element to it too. What did that come to you right away to sort of want to work that in that part of the story?
Yeah, I think the more that I researched mediums, I researched both, I guess what you could call both sides of the debate, if that's how you want to put it. Because there are people who staunchly believe that what they're doing is real, and there are people who are just such huge skeptics. And so the more I looked into the skeptic side of it, the more I became interested in the fact that many of those skeptics are magicians. And that goes back to even, Harry Houdini was a really famous skeptic, and he spent like the latter part of his life trying to disprove fake mediums. And so I've always been really, really interested in that. And so then when I decided I really wanted to throw a magician into the mix, I started thinking about the Magic Castle, which is in Los Angeles. And it's a place that mostly you can't go into unless you are a magician, and I'm not a magician, so I've never been there. So I just started to imagine what it might be like and coming up with the most ridiculous things ever. And then with that element, it became much more of an adventure and a mystery.
That's so interesting. I didn't realize that like magician medium dynamic that's in the book has real roots. You would think that magicians would be sort of wanting to keep any facade up, like
It's
sort of
really interesting,
strange.
right? Because like especially with Harry Houdini, who I did a lot of research on magicians when I was writing a book several years ago called The Life and Crimes of Burnetta Wallflower, which was my second book. And so in that book, the character's father is a stage magician. And so I did a ton of research about lots of different stage magicians, and Harry Houdini is so interesting because his thing was always that he did magic, and he would sort of act like it was real. But then when he was off stage, he was like, no, it's just a trick, and there's no real magic in the world. And so he would go out of his way to show the tricks that other people were doing.
Interesting. I would never have thought that. Well, so in the story, Aunt Nick is a medium, CJ's aunt, and but so much at the heart of the story, I think, is CJ's relationship with her aunt, and sort of their bond and her Aunt Nick. I don't want to give too much away, but
I know
she
it's hard to
took
talk
her
about.
in. I know there's so many secrets. But was there any, I guess, what did you draw on for their sort of story and their bond? Because I just felt like it, I'm always on the lookout for books that portray, different family dynamics and makeups. And I'm just sort of curious about that relationship.
Yeah, I'm not sure that there's anything specific that relationship came from. I think definitely a theme in a lot of my books is talking about complicated relationships, especially with parents and kids. And now that I am a parent, I think so much about the ways that I am a flawed parent, but still an absolutely loving parent, and how that affects my kids in both good and bad ways. And I'm really, really interested in that dynamic and all the different ways that there are to parent. And so I think it just came out of that interest in me. I guess all my books sort of have that as a theme in there. But I do like writing about unusual parent-child, or in this case, aunt-child relationships.
Right. Yeah, that was actually going to be one of my questions because I was thinking as I was reading this one, so many of your characters are going through really challenging times in some way. I was thinking of, Annie and Umbrella Summers dealing with her brother's death, and then Albie and Absolutely Almost, which I love Absolutely Almost so much, is sort of dealing with a difficult relationship with his parents and learning challenges. And I was sort of curious if I know you're saying that the idea of complicated parent-child relationships appeals to you. Do you think when you're writing in general that you're sort of wanting to portray characters who are going through like big struggles?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think I think it's much more interesting to read a book where the character is going through something really big. And I think those are the things that I'm drawn to. I really like to write books that are both really sad and really funny. So I definitely gravitate towards that. I don't know. I think, you know, I feel like I had a pretty good childhood, but I also think that there were major events in my life that I can pinpoint, and usually right around the age that I normally write for, which I think is why I'm drawn to that particular age. Yeah. So I think that there were major things that I can recall that really affected my life. And that's why I want to write about that age and what feels so huge in that moment when you're that age.
Yeah. And you do such a great job of, you know, there's always a lot of, you know, challenges, and they're very emotionally, you know, meaty, but at the same time, so entertaining, and there is so much humor. And I just think your books are perfect for either like discussing as a class, because there's always so much to them, or I know in the past I used Absolutely Almost for a parent-child book club in my library, and it was honestly one of the best discussions we had ever had, because it just, there were so many layers to it. And I think because you do such a great job portraying those parent-child dynamics, there was a lot for parents to think about too, and their own parenting and relationship with their kids. So I definitely recommend, I think if people are looking for a book to read with their kids, or if librarians and teachers are looking for read alouds or books for book clubs, I think your books just lend themselves so well to discussion and are so relatable to kids, which led me to want to ask, I know the kids in my school adored your books, and I was just curious, I'm sure you do lots of school visits and author events and things. What kind of feedback do you get from kids?
Yeah, usually really positive. I do tons of school visits. And I love talking to kids who have read my books, and I actually really love when I'm doing a school visit and I get to have like lunch with a small group of kids, and I get to ask them what books they like and what books they hate. And, you know, we get to really dig in to stuff that we enjoy, and or hate. I love, love, love asking kids what books they hate, 'cause they get really, really animated. I think the things that are most interesting for me is when they sort of disagree with a conclusion I've come to in my books, or especially with Lost in the Sun. I don't know if you've read that one, but there's a part at the end, there's like a big story element that's left unsaid, and kids get really mad at me. They'll be like, well, why didn't you tell us that? I don't understand. I really want to know. And I'll be like, well, this is the reason I made that decision as an author. And they're like, we don't care. but I do like talking to the kids about that. And, you know, even when they don't like something that I've done, it's really interesting to get feedback from them and see what they think.
Yeah, that's the sign of a great book, when you get that sort of passion. I think that's awesome. I was noticing too, I mean, I knew that your books had been on our state book award list a lot, the Massachusetts Children's Book Awards, and always do really well. But I didn't realize, I mean, there are so many books that have gotten picked for state award lists across the country. And that must be really gratifying. I feel like, you know, you pick a book on there that is going to be, you know, compelling and a crowd pleaser. So it's always, I feel like, I'm sure that's nice company to be in on those lists.
It really is. And I love too, because it's, you know, librarians who pick the books, and I feel like librarians are my people. my mom was a high school librarian, so such a big spot in my heart for librarians. And I think you guys do so much good work. So it's awesome to get that recognition from people that I really admire.
That's awesome. And I will say, if, you know, parents or teachers have not checked out their state's book award list, it's such a fun way for kids to discover new books to read. I know in my library, ours were MCBA, Massachusetts Children's Book Awards, and It was like a giant book club. You're reading the same books at the same time, and then they're voting for a winner. So it's such a fun thing to get involved with if your kids aren't already. Well, I would love to back up. I'm always so interested in how authors sort of got to where they are today. Mm-hmm. Have you always wanted to be a writer? Was that a big part of your life for a long time?
Well, when I was a kid, I really liked writing, but I definitely didn't feel that that was like the thing that I was the best at. I think I always, when I do school visits, I talk about how my brother was the writer of the family and he would write these amazing stories. And then I'd write stories and my parents would be like, all right, that's pretty good. You know? but I liked it. And so it was just always something I sort of did as a hobby. But when I was a kid, I thought I was going to be a pediatrician, mostly because this is true, even though it sounds like a joke. When I was two, I had a crush on my pediatrician. So I sort of decided my future career in that moment. And then I stuck with that until college. In undergrad, I was pre-med, and I, in between all of my classes, I was taking like chem and bio and calculus. And I had these gaps between my classes that it was too short a gap for me to walk all the way back to the dorm. So I would go to the campus bookstore, and they had a really small children's book section. And I would sit on the floor and just read children's books for 50 minutes between classes. And that was the year that I think Harry Potter had come out a few years before, but that was the year I discovered it. It was 1999. And Holes came out that year, and just like such good books. And I would revisit like Tuck Everlasting. And I started to realize that this was my favorite time of the day, and that I really wasn't actually enjoying my classes very much, but I loved children's books. And that was always the sort of thing that I had written too. So I started to slowly be like, you know what? Maybe this is where I need to focus my energies.
That's so cool. That's such a good example of like, you never know where you're like, curiosity or interest are going to lead. And wow, that's so interesting. And yeah, what a fun time to be getting into kids' books again.
Yeah, absolutely.
Imagine it's like a golden era. so from that spark of maybe that's what you wanted to do, how did it sort of go from there?
So then I had written a few novels at that point that I really hadn't shown anyone, and I don't think they were particularly good because I had no idea what I was doing. But I decided after I finished undergrad, I decided that I was going to just apply to graduate schools for writing. And I thought, you know, if I can get into grad school, maybe I'm okay at this. And if I can't, then I had like no backup plan. I had no idea what I was going to do. So at the time, I only found two graduate schools that had specifically children's writing programs. And so I ended up going to the New School in New York, coming from California, which is where I grew up. And so I ended up in New York at the New School, and I had some really awesome teachers like David Levithan and Sarah Weeks and Tor Seidler. Yeah, some really just great, great people. And at the very end of my last year there, I got a job as an editorial assistant at FSG Books for Young Readers. And so I was working there for 5 years, and I sold my book on the day of my thesis reading. I sold my first two novels. And it was just a really awesome time, and I was so overwhelmingly busy. But so I was frantically rewriting books on my lunch hour, but then also learning how to edit books. And so I was like learning both sides of the business at the same exact time. It was pretty great.
That's awesome. Are there any, I'm sure that was so helpful to be editing at the same time as working on your own books. Are there, specific aspects of having some experience in editorial that you really felt like helped you shape your book?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, from some of the authors that I got to work with, like Barbara O'Connor is one of my absolute favorites.
Oh, and
I got to
work she's with wonderful.
Her. She's amazing. Yeah, Valerie Hobbs and Peter Cease and Jack Gantos. I got to work with some just really incredible people. And then also the editors that I got to work with too, particularly Wesley Adams and Francis Foster, who just delightful people and amazing, amazing editors. And so I learned so much about how a book takes shape. And I think the biggest takeaway I probably got from that was that, you know, even these really established, fantastic authors start at a place that is not polished and finished. And I think that's something that's really hard to see when you're a fledgling author, that like you read these books and it just feels like they're so fantastic. Like how can I ever write something that is that polished? And then to see it through the process is really fascinating.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I love to talk about that with kids even, to see like, okay, the book didn't just come out fully formed like that. Like it took revision and a lot of work. I always remember I went to an exhibit at the British Library where you can see like one of Jane Austen's manuscripts, and there's all these crossouts and edits. I'm like, oh, even Jane Austen had to you know, really revise to get there. But I think that's so interesting. I know I've seen on some, forget who, there were a couple authors I remember showing kids their websites, and they had posted like some pictures of like drafts and all the different edits and things. But yeah, that would be a great perspective to get, I'm sure. Well, you know, from there, it just seems like your books have taken off so much. And, you know, you're one of those authors where I feel like book after book, is just always such a standout. And, so I'm curious sort of now, like what your writing routine is like, and, I guess where you get some of your ideas, just sort of what your writing life is like now.
Yeah, I mean, I've always had a pretty chaotic writing life because I just, like, day to day, I'm like, what's it going to be today? So I'm definitely not one of those authors who's like, I sit down at exactly 8 o'clock with my cup of tea and I write for 2 hours. I mean, when I'm writing a rough draft, I aim to write 2,000 words a day. This definitely does not always happen. I have some fantastic writing partners, and we will go to a coffee shop and, you know, stare at each other across our laptops until we hit our work down. And that's super, super helpful. But yeah, sometimes I write in the early morning, sometimes I write in the afternoon, sometimes I totally do not write and I do other things. I mean, I think when I started writing full time, I was not aware of how much of the job of being a writer is not actually writing, how much of it is administrative and answering emails and fixing your website and getting ready for school visits and that sort of thing that I think people don't really think of when they think of the job, and it's pretty boring but very necessary. So yeah. I do a lot of that too.
Yeah, I always think it's interesting. I think we sometimes have this vision of like the writer just like holed up in their little cabin in the woods, never like interacting with the outside world. But there is so much more to it, especially now with all the, you know, promotion and things that go into it. I think it's helpful to know some of the behind the scenes. And I always think that's so interesting. Well, one of my questions I had for you too, when I will say to listeners, when we were originally trying to schedule this, we were both working around nap times. Mm-hmm. So it got me wondering a little bit. One of the things I like to think about for my site and, you know, in my role as a school librarian, I was always thinking about like getting kids excited about books and, you know, now having my own daughter, like raising a reader. And I'm just curious, as someone who books are such a big part of your life, and obviously you're a reader yourself, how have you sort of approached bringing reading into your family life and sort of sharing that love?
Well, I have two very little kids, and we read at least two books every bedtime. So each of my kids get to pick a book, and I'm always really interested to see what they pick. I try really hard not to curate their list too much. So I bring, you know, I bring most of the books into the house. Every time I go on a trip, I usually bring back a book or two because I can't help myself. But then there are some that I think are absolutely amazing and they just want nothing to do with them. And there are other ones where I'm like, oh, this one's a dud. But yep. I will read it over and over and over and over if they want me to. I will say there was one book that I shan't name that I actually secretly removed from our house because I couldn't handle it anymore because they wanted to read it.
Sometimes you just have to do that. That we there's this Halloween book that still my daughter makes me read like 10 times a day. And last night, actually, I sort of like tucked it behind a couple books because I just couldn't do it again.
I know. I tried so hard because I'm like, there's something about this one that really speaks to them. But, oh, every once in a while, you really got to hide that book.
Yep.
But yeah, we read. It's really funny to me too because like we read How the Grinch Stole Christmas at least once a week. And I'm like, you guys,
in April. Okay. I know. There's no sense of that sometimes. I'm like, okay, we'll read the Valentine's Day book again. It's, you know.
And then I'm constantly fascinated by, like, what on earth draws them to particular books. Because there are books they love that are, like, you know, illustrated in sort of cartoony styles. And they rhyme. And they're really fun. And they're short. And they're, like, boppy. And then there's other ones that are like these long fairy tales that are illustrated in this weird like Renaissance style of art, and I just think they're so boring and long, and they love them. And I just like I can't find any rhyme or reason behind what they like, so we just but that's kind of cool because we try out everything and we go to the library and I let them pick things off the shelf. And yeah, it's kind of cool. I mean, I'm definitely exposed to things I never would have picked up because they find them somehow and gravitate towards them.
Yeah, I think that's great. And I think that's why just having access to so many books is so important mm-hmm. because you don't know what's going to appeal to them and what's not. So just having lots of choices and yeah, heading to the library, I think is so great. And did they get excited or to them it's probably old news, but to see your books around the house, is that exciting or is it sort of like that's all they know?
Well, I only have one picture book that's out so far. I have two that are in the works, but there's only one that's out so far, so I think they kind of understand that I wrote that book, but they just like don't get it. But we that is in the rotation and they really like that one, so we read that and they always go bye mommy.
Oh, that's so cute.
So that's pretty cute. But then you know they know that I leave every day to write books, but I think they just don't really understand what that is. My daughter the other day said that she was going to her work, which was behind the armchair. That's where her work is apparently. And I said, oh, what do you do for your work? She said, I read books to kids and go on airplanes. I was like, okay, yeah,
there you go.
Pretty much my job. Okay, cool.
Oh, that's funny. Well, that'll be interesting as they get older and approach that middle grade age. I'm sure they'll be excited to read some of the books. Or who knows? It'll probably be like, oh, you know.
Mom, geez.
Yeah, that's moms. I don't want to read that. But I'm sure that their friends will think it's very cool.
Yeah.
Well, I always love to find out what authors have been reading lately. So I know you're reading lots of books to your kids, so it could be one of those. But are there any books lately that you've been excited about that you'd want to recommend to listeners?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the book my kids are really, really into right now, which I also love, is Shark Lady by Jess Keating. Yeah, it's so good.
I literally have that out from the library right now, but we haven't actually read it yet.
I love it. I love the illustrations. Oh gosh, I can't remember the artist name at the moment, but I just love it so much. And my kids are also really into sharks and we go to the aquarium all the time. And last time we were at the aquarium, we noticed these sharks that we'd never noticed before that were sleeping on the bottom of the you know, giant shark tank, I guess. And they were perfectly still. And my daughter was like, oh, just like Eugenie. She remembered Eugenie Clark, the shark lady. She found these sharks that she proved that sharks didn't always have to move, that they could lie still sometimes. And it's really cool. It's a really, really great book. And then the other one that I just read that I loved is Up for Air, which was written by a good friend of mine, actually, and one of my writing buddies, Lori Morrison. And it comes out, I think, next week. And it's a really awesome tween book, like in that place that is so, so, so hard to write for, about a girl who I think she's in seventh grade. and she's like a, you know, the star swimmer of her middle school, but also really struggles academically. And she catches the attention of an older boy on the swim team, and but it's so good. I feel like that age is just so fascinating because you're not quite a grown up and not quite a kid, and Lori captures it just so perfectly. So I'm really excited for that book to hit the world.
Oh, that sounds great. I am definitely going to add that to my list. And by the time this airs, it'll definitely be available. So I will link to both of those in the show notes. And of course to your books. And yeah, just congratulations again on Far Away. It's always wonderful to have a new Lisa Graff book out to look forward to. Yeah. And thank you for making the time to come on A Bookish Home.
Well, this was really fun. This was my first podcast, actually. I had a really fantastic time.
So exciting. Wonderful. I hope you head to your local library or bookstore to pick up a copy of Far Away. To learn more about Lisa Graff, you can visit her website, lisagraff.com. You can also follow her on Twitter at Lisa Graff or on Facebook at Lisa Graff Author. For links to all of the books mentioned on this week's episode, including Far Away, you can visit the show notes at abookishhome.com. There you can also subscribe so that you'll receive an email each time a new post or podcast becomes available. And if you have a moment to rate or review the podcast in iTunes or wherever you get your podcast, that would be so helpful. And be sure to subscribe as well so you never miss an episode. Thanks for listening and happy reading!